Good morning. This is the time and place for the PAC DC Relocation and Deaccession Subcommittee meeting. It is Thursday, December 11th at 10:01 a.m. I will start with a roll call vote to establish quorum. Ann Lopez.
Here.
Jim Glock.
Present.
Wesley Cree.
Present.
Kelly Way?
Present.
And Lydia Barker? Lydia not here. Okay, well, we still have a quorum of members. Moving on to item two, introduction of guests and attendees. I'll start with myself. Hello, everyone. My name is Sadie Shaw. I'm the Public Art and Community Design Administrator for the Arts Foundation. I also facilitate the PAC DC meetings. And feel free, you, if you'd like to start.
Hi, everyone. My name is Yuyu Shiratori. I'm the Public Art Collections Associate with Arts Foundation. Pass it over to Wilwin.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for assembling. Wilwin Reyes, Director of Public Art.
Jim, do you want to introduce yourself?
Certainly. Jim Glock, I'm the Chair of the Public Art Community Design Committee for 2025.
Wesley.
Hi, I'm Wesley Fawcett Cree. I am an artist based in Tucson, and I am also a member of the PAC D committee.
Anne?
I am a member of the PAC D committee. I am the Ward 4 representative.
Thank you. And Kelly?
Hi, everybody. I'm Kelly Way. I'm the City of Tucson's Cultural Affairs Officer.
Thank you. And then we have some guests. Michael?
I'm Michael Fassett, Board President for the Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation.
Thank you. And Damien?
I'm Damien Klinko. I'm the Executive Director of the Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation.
And then I'm not sure your name.
Chris Bunn. I know. That's a bad Zoom. Chris Bondante, I'm the personal representative for Charles Clement, my uncle.
Thank you. Moving on to item three, review of administrative directives, presentation of administrative directives for the public art program and relocation and deaccession 7.01-7. And EU is going to be presenting on this.
Hey, can everyone see my screen here?
Yes.
Okay. So I don't have a polished presentation for this. I figure we would just go directly from the source of the administrative directives. This can be found if you just search City of Tucson Administrative Directives, and we are going through 70107. So as we may know that we're all here together to look over the relocation and deaccession policy for the City of Tucson for the Charles Clement works that's on the City of South Tucson. So the policy for this, the deaccession relocation program is to, I'll just highlight this, to ensure the ongoing presence and integrity of the public collection and the sites for which the artwork was created. Part of the policy is also to preserve the intention of the artwork, honor civic interests, and also to make the artwork accessible to people in Tucson. Part of the policy states that when we have a request that we go through this formal process. So I appreciate everyone taking the time to be a part of this meeting. Everyone's voices is critical to having like an outcome that we all want. So the relocation deaccession request involved careful consideration of public opinion, professional judgment, and legal advice. So all of this we will go over with like what other voices that we would want in the room in terms of professional judgment. So we will go through the guidelines, and this refers mostly to deaccession, but this also involves relocation requests. They'll be only considered after careful and partial evaluation of the artwork within the context of the city's collection as a whole. So consideration of removal or relocation of artwork must involve the same degree of careful review as the decision of commissioning the work. We will notify any living artists for the work that's being deaccessed or relocated. And deaccession should be considered only after 5 years after the time from the date of installation for permanent works or acceptance into the collection. So we will go down towards eligible artworks for this policy. The process here, it involves city departments, elected officials, concerned citizens, and the Arts Foundation. We are a neutral party, and we are facilitating the meeting process and just getting everyone together to consider, the requests and the inquiries for either the deaccession or relocation of the artwork. So the PACD Public Art Community and Design Committee, that we are the sub committee for this specific project. So when we come to a conclusion, we will talk with the PACD committee and make the recommendation there. But this subcommittee, there's no more than 7 members, up to 5 arts professionals, including PACD members, city staff, who are directly responsible for the artwork. And so the responsibility for the subcommittee is to seek expert advice in the process, request input from other professionals, and we can go over that in my presentation here in a bit. So criteria for relocation, deaccession, we'll go down to item B here. Artwork is not or rarely on display because of lack of suitable site. Condition or security of artwork cannot be reasonably guaranteed. The artwork has been damaged, deteriorated, repairs impractical or unfeasible. The artwork endangers public safety. In the case of site-specific artwork, no suitable site is available or significant changes in the use, character, or design of the site has occurred that affect the integrity of the artwork. And so we can go through the criteria, and I think for this project, we can cross-reference this, and it does fall under relocation policy, that there are some criteria that has been met. So for the application of the policy, this is more just like a description, I guess like a flow chart for the process. So upon receipt of the relocation or deaccession request, Arts Foundation Executive Director will refer the matter to public staff. So we are convening here today because we have received the request. Notify the PACD chair to raise the concern to the PACD members. We have here more internal process of letting city attorney's office know, gathering information, reviewing artist contracts, agreements, and anything that's relevant to the projects. And also item four, reaching out to independent professionals to get additional support for how a relocation or deaccession may look, including repair, budget items, you know, engineers, and seeing if how feasible it is. And from five on, it's more after this meeting, if reasonable efforts to resolve the concern have gone as far as they can go and have failed to resolve the concern, it should be move forward to the city. So Arts Foundation staff here, this is more internal process. Like I said, get documentation of the artwork, see where the city holds clear title of the artwork, reach out to appropriate city departments, collaborate with them to participate, reach out to city attorney. So for the purpose of this subcommittee, we are trying to make a find a resolution or a recommendation that we can raise to the PACD. So it's important for, you know, if there's the ideal solution that be raised here. So it will be raised to the PACD once we all come to agreement. The PACD will make the recommendation, approve it, and it will go to the board members, board of directors for the Arts Foundation. And after the board approves it, it will be forwarded to the responsible department with the city. And from there, it goes to city manager. And from there, the city takes action. And a final note for the policy, which is important, is the disposition, relocation of the artwork. That if the work was designed for a specific site, relocation must be to a new site consistent with the artist's intention. There's sale, loan, and trade of artwork, which we can get to that if needed. Donation of artwork, this isn't actually relevant for us, but destruction of artwork, if sale, trade, gift, extended loan, or relocation is not feasible, the artwork will be destroyed. Destruction is appropriate if artwork is deteriorated or damaged beyond repair and deemed to be of negligible value. So we can, yeah, and so that those are the highlights. And again, all of this can be found if you just look up City of Tucson administrative directives. And if there's any questions about this, we can discuss it in the subcommittee. So that'll be the end of that presentation. Thank you all for enduring that. So Sadie, I can pass it back to you, or if I can just keep going on to presenting on the Clement sculptures.
Sure. But before we move on, are there any questions specific to this agenda item for the administrative directives of the City of Tucson? Questions or comments, Jim?
I'm sorry. I probably was told this and have forgotten. The request for the deaccession was by whom?
It was raised by the Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation. And that's something I'll get into a bit here in my presentation. But yeah, Damian Klinko is the one who was like who reached out to me, the Arts Foundation, to trigger the request.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions or comments about the administrative directives? Okay, hearing none, we can move on to item four, project overview, Clement Turnkey at the HCD site. You?
Okay. Thank you. Can everyone see my screen? Yes? Okay. Okay, so Charles Clement is the artist that we are focusing on today. The sculptures have several names. Damien mentioned that they are called the Turnkey, so this is the name that we were going by for this subcommittee. Just a little bit of an artist overview. Charles Clement moved to Tucson around 1950. He was an incredibly prolific all-around artist. He's made a pretty big impact around Tucson to the public just through his civic works, collaborating with local architects. And what you see here is the El Presidio Fountain, which somewhat recently went through a preservation through the help of the Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation. This fountain was in collaboration with architect Michael Lugo. Another notable public artwork from him is located at the administrative building at the University of Arizona. This is, I believe it's on the east side of the building. Beautiful artwork in pristine condition here. So the artwork that we are going to be talking about today, we have a map here that points out the location. It's South Park on the northwest corner of 35th and Park. It is part of the city of Tucson property profile. It's under the Department of Housing and Community Development. It was, the sculptures were created 1970, we think, but the building has been there for quite some time. So here's an aerial view of the artworks we will be looking at today. There are seven locations. There are two cubic ones, four pillars, and two panel sculptures. And I'll get into that right now. And so the two cubic sculptures shown here, they're located on the most southern part of the property, so on 35th Street. You can see that they are cubic forms with like a on top of an additional base. They measure around 2 feet by 2 feet. And we have a series of columns or towers or pillars. These are two of four that are placed on the property. As you can see here, the image shows a tree that has like fallen. These are close-up images of post-accident. So there's an accident at this property. These two are touching the tree, but they haven't been impacted by the fall or the fence. It is still somewhat of a precarious situation. There's a lot of debris around the sculptures, but for the most part, they are in good condition. And so these are two additional pillars that are located further north on the property. They resemble the same tower pillar-like structure. And these two panels, the one that's on the right side that depicts more like a tree motif is at the very northern side of the property. The one outlined in red is more on the southern end. The image that we have here outlined in red is from 2019. And since then, when I did a site visit, when the gate was knocked down, this is what I observed. I think it is this pillar or this panel that I think it had been there for a while and it wasn't impacted from the car accident, but it because it was gated off, there was no way of like being able to unearth this until now. So the one that's on the northern end here to the right is in good condition, and the one outlined in red here is it has fallen, and there's rebar exposed, and it might take quite like an overhaul to recreate it. And so here's a collection of the works that are standing now. So we have the four pillars here at the bottom, the two cubic sculptures, and the one panel. So just to go over the documentation, this project, as I said, was we are thinking that it was established in 1970, just through some research. We don't have any paper files on the work. We don't have the original public art selection process for Clement, and how he had obtained this project or how he was involved. We don't really have documentation on the installation approval or engineering documentation or maintenance agreements. And I will say to that, we obviously more recently within the past 5 years have more robust documentation of all of these processes, including call to artists. And since the artwork was created around the 70s, the Arts Foundation didn't exist as we exist today. And so we've gone through various organizational changes, name changes, and with that also technological changes. So we don't have these documents. We also recognize that we are like doing our best to, include all of this for future projects so we can be better stewards of. Yeah, of our public art collection. So what was surfaced is that the Smithsonian American Art Museum co-sponsored Save Outdoor Sculpture Survey, where they funded, along with a handful of other organizations, to do a nationwide survey documenting and preserving outdoor sculptures throughout America. And so through this documentation, we have some idea of like where the project came from, but that is one of our few sources of the document or the contract. Down here, the hyperlink tells us like where all this information can be found, but this is also the same Smithsonian catalog. It has been called the Robert Kennedy Homes South Park Neighborhood, and through some research, it was also called the Turnkey Sculptures. So it's a lot of information to uncover, but this specific documentation outlined that 14 abstract cast concrete pieces were scattered throughout a neighborhood housing complex. Most of the pieces are cubical or rectangular in shape and contain high relief depictions of abstract symbols. So these objects, I think it's pretty classic Charles Clement works, so it could be referring to any number of his pieces, but this is a pretty specific location and for public housing, so it does relate back to this the location that we are talking about. One interesting thing that they do mention is that each of the pieces were situated before small apartment houses because these were created for public housing. Which is described as the 80-unit turnkey housing project, later named Robert F. Kennedy. It goes on to say that the mix of sculpture and low-income housing was designed to arouse pride in the neighborhood through aesthetic expression. And so, although scattered throughout the neighborhood, the pieces are considered to be a single sculpture. And so, I'll just go back for a second here. So, this we would refer to the four columns down here, definitely same part of the same collection. And I think his intention was to create these as a cohesive project. So. So to go over the condition of these works, we had formally had the RLA Conservation Group come out and assess all of the city's public art collection back in 2019. The sculptures are cast concrete. They have a organic textured surface. And in the report, it was noted that due to the surface and just the weathering patterns in Tucson, that it is vulnerable to the freeze-thaw process and raising the layers of paint off of the sculpture. So it was noted that though the work is in good condition for its age, that does have, like, you know, standard aesthetic compromises with paint loss in certain areas. Said several towers show older damage that was later painted over. Some of the cement sculptures has cracks but appear stable. So at the time, 2019, the property was not fully fenced in, and at that time it was noted to be in good condition and the conservation priority a 3. And the conservation priority goes from 1, it being extremely, it needs like immediate attention, and 3 being on the lower side of needing maintenance. And so the appraiser valuation at that time was $108,700. And because it was noted that these objects are part of a whole collection, it's not entirely clear if the new the appraiser valuation refers to a singular object or all of them. And so to just go, well, this image here, if you can see a little bit to the left, excuse me, a little bit to the left of the bottom side of the sculpture here, you can see a little bit of a crack. And so that's one of the conditions that the RLA organization have reported on. There weren't too many of these surface cracks, but this will probably, you know, within a few years cause more of the paint to chip and cause structural damage. Because of the car accident and the inquiry that came in, I've been reaching out to city departments to surface some information about the property, the origin of the work, and just some basic information. Through that research, it was discovered that the property is expected to be for sale soon. So I'm in conversation with them in terms of resolving the artwork problem. They did say that the listing date can be adjusted until this issue is resolved, and also stated that if need be, the artwork can be clearly excluded from the property's transfer of ownership. So I will be in conversation with them after this meeting if there's any concerns about which direction to go, whether we suggest that the listing date be adjusted or other notes. So keep that in mind. Because the information of the property being listed soon for sale, I reached out to Art Solutions an installation. They're a art handling company in Scottsdale, just to see what the cost may be to relocate the work. And because they're located in Scottsdale, they prefer to do a site visit, obviously, to get a full grasp of the project. But I sent them some images of the artwork, my understanding of what the materials are, weight, and how many objects there are. They estimated that the cost of working with us for this project could be around 7,000, but this is like a very, very rough estimate. And I just wanted to present this information to everyone because the sale of the property was surfaced here recently. So yeah, to just reiterate, the estimate is just strictly an estimate, and that, should we choose to move in this direction, it would be wise to get a more accurate quote. So this is just an overview of the subcommittee, I guess, flow chart, just so we're all on the same page of what to expect next steps. So we received the request from the Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation. As I mentioned, Damian Klinko reached out, and he was also part of the preserving the Clement El Presidio Fountain. So that's his organization. They're a private nonprofit organization focusing on historic, architectural, and cultural preservation. From the request, it prompts the PACDC subcommittee meeting, which we're doing here. And this, from here on, is more of like future things that will happen. But PACDC subcommittee determines the next step towards resolving the relocation request. From here, we can talk about, we can seek additional information prior to sending a recommendation to the PACD committee. So the PACD moves the recommendation for a vote, and from there goes to the Arts Foundation Board of Directors, and then from there it goes to the city. So, yes, so I will stop sharing my screen here. As I mentioned, we have Damon Klinko, who was the one who's been reaching out to us. The person who has been in communication and on behalf of the Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation. So, Damien, if there are additional words or like, I'm sure I missed a lot of information about Damien, Charles Clement's work, but I will pass the mic to you. Thank
Thank
you.
you so much, Yu, and I really appreciate the committee's time today and convening during the holiday season. We know that it's busy, but we also appreciate the seriousness with which you are considering all of Tucson's public works, but also these. I have a PowerPoint I'd love to share with you, which actually dives a little bit into the history as well. I think we have a little bit more information that we can share. Let me just get this into presenter mode. Okay, so just to give a little bit of background, the Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation has been working with the Charles Clement Estate and Charles Clement's family for over a decade to ensure the conservation of his archive. His full artistic archive was contributed to the Preservation Foundation over that period of time. And about 4 years ago, the family contributed his intellectual property to the foundation. So the Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation effectively is the Charles Clement archive and holds rights to his intellectual property, which I think is also critical for this discussion. The Charles Clement project that we'll refer to as the Turnkey Project was created between 1996 and 1970. It originally consisted of actually what we understand to be 15 sculptures. And it was in collaboration with an architect, Edson and Goldblatt of which were AIA architects. And I'll just walk through a little bit of what we know about the Turnkey Project. It was an 80-unit federal turnkey public housing project, which with construction beginning in April 1970. It was a private development with federal funding. This was sort of during a period where the federal government was shifting away from actually doing the development and worked with private sector developers. It was designed, as I mentioned, by Mark Edson and William Goldblatt, and built by private contractors for the Tucson Housing Authority. So it was, again, this public-private partnership. It became a focal point for equitable hiring with employment and monitoring compliance with federal labor laws, which was critical. Charles Clement was commissioned, we believe it was a private commission, to create the site-specific sculptural works for the project, integrating art into the new community environment. And the project symbolized federal investment paired with local demands for civil rights, inclusion, and community representation. And this is a sketch of what that development originally looked like. I'll just give you a small, brief overview of Charles Clement. He was born in New York City to French parents. He trained in industrial design and illustration, and he developed a wide range artistic career. He graduated in 1943 from the Franklin School of Professional Arts in New York, and he did additional coursework in New York at the New School and in France. He moved to Tucson in 1950 with his wife, Louise, and they designed and built their home and studio in the Tucson Mountains in 1952 out on Speedway. And he maintained a very expressive multiple disciplinary project. And as you mentioned, he did a number of public art projects. He was probably the most prolific and most significant public art sculptor in our community during the sort of 20th century, mid 20th century. And he died in 1981 while traveling abroad. Again, this was just mentioned, so I won't go through all of this, but I do want to note that really this discussion came out for us after an inquiry about the Noah's Ark sculpture, which was produced in 1966 and which had been donated to the Reed Park Zoo in the 1980s. And was on display for a number of years and then was taken off display. And we inquired about it as part of another project, which I'll talk about towards the end of this presentation. And it was sort of discovered after multiple meetings and a lot of conversation that at some point between 2018 and 2020, and what I would say is the very recent past, the sculpture, which was a very significant work of his, was disposed of by Parks and Recreation or the zoo. It's not even clear who was responsible for the disposal. And it really brought into focus for us some real concerns about Charles Clement's artistic works held by the city. We advocated very hard after there was an initial effort to demolish the fountain that you see on the right, the El Presidio fountain, which was mentioned. And we were able to advocate very strongly with the mayor's office and with Pima County to invest into the rehabilitation of that fountain, as opposed to its demolition, which was the initial plan. And today it's sort of become an iconic symbol of our civic spaces in downtown. So really out of that, we raised the question about the turnkey sculptures because of their current condition and also their decontextualization, and that they really no longer in any way reflect or convey Clement's in artistic intention. So I just wanted to sort of briefly go over what we see as condition and stewardship of these particular sculptures. We assume that as part of the South Park public housing redevelopment, which happened in 2000, that's really seems to be the only inflection point that we've been able to identify where there was a major change to whatever that housing development was originally, that we assume that these were removed and relocated. And they were removed and relocated without consultation to the Clement family. There doesn't appear to have been any sort of civic process. We're not even clear whether they were acknowledged or recognized as Clement sculptures at the time. They were dispersed to various locations without any sort of interpretive contacts, without clear artistic attribution, and outside their intended architectural environment. As you mentioned, there are seven on the site that we're discussing today. We know that there is at least one other in a public park that's been painted over and certainly does not reflect the image on the right, which is the sort of bare concrete aesthetic that Clement was known for. So for more than a decade, the seven sculptures that we've been discussing, which were all part of this series, have remained on a city-owned vacant and boarded-up property on 35th and Park Avenue. They have been allowed to deteriorate. When we did a site visit a year ago, there was drug paraphernalia sitting on top of one. They were being used as toilets. They've been damaged in various ways. They were semi-gated and fenced, and some were not. And although there has been, you can see like in this image how crisp sort of the relief detailing is and the edging. The sculptures now have a lot of damage and have been painted over many times, I think to hide that damage, as you said. And so they've suffered this deterioration. They've lacked conservation, and there's been no interpretation, and not all the sculptures are accounted for. So it's a partial. It's now a part of what we consider a partial work. And so to provide just a little more context, the Preservation Foundation, because of the generosity of the Clement family and Chris Bondante, who was on this call, they contributed and donated 50% of a property that Charles Clement had designed for their family, which is in Midtown Tucson. It's near Grant and Rosemont, and it's called the Bondante House. And I'll talk about that. I just want to show in one more picture of how these works originally looked: the exposed concrete, the cubic form, the iconic sort of relief detailing that Clement was known for. And here it is in its original context. So the Preservation Foundation purchased and was donated the Bondante House. It went through a major restoration. We held a month-long open sort of exhibition and retrospective of Clement's work over October and November and as part of Tucson Modernism Week. So at this point, given the context of what's occurred here, the fact that it was really not, in many ways, there wasn't even awareness. It was really part of the public art collection that it's been allowed to deteriorate in the way it has had with zero monitoring, the conditions that it's a partial sculpture, that even the pieces as they're displayed are inconsistent with the original intent. They're actually, they've been reduced in size. The columns themselves have been buried or were, when they were removed and relocated, they were cut. So that has to be sort of determined. But we would respect that the City of Tucson return the surviving Clement sculptures from this project to the Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation for proper conservation, interpretation, and long-term stewardship, particularly in light of the sale of the site by the city or the proposed sale of the site. We think that this is urgent. Our proposal is that we reinstall them at the Bondante House, which is this 1956 property, which is now owned by the Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation, where the works can be preserved, contextualized, and interpreted within an architectural and historically appropriate setting. And again, because this property is owned by the Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation, as long as our long-term sort of real estate trust, we make these properties available to the public for different types of interpretive opportunities, like the exhibition we recently hosted. The action will ensure that this public artwork are cared for consistent with their artistic significance and that the environment reflects the intent and integrity and legacy of this artist, because in its current condition and form and what's happened, it certainly does not. So that's our general request. It really came out as, and I was want to again preface that this really came out of a series of conversations and emails with UU after sort of the Noah's Ark situation materialized, and then sort of the revelation that the city had disposed of the work. We're not even sure what disposed of really means. That's the language that, you know, was provided. We hope that that work will still emerge. We don't know whether that means it was taken to the Los Reales landfill or whether it was taken to someone's backyard. But out of that, this conversation occurred, and initially it was just sort of like, what is the status of these? And as it became clear that there was like even a lack of awareness about these sculptures, where the rest of them are, because there are another, six or seven, that are missing. This is sort of our current request, because they no longer convey in any way the original artistic intent. And really, I don't think in many ways should be, unless without that contextualization, be described as Charles Clement's works. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Damien. Any questions from the group or guests?
And then I also, I'm sorry to interrupt. We also have Chris Bondante, who's here, who may want to provide some comments.
Well, you pretty much said it all, but I am grateful to the Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation for what they've been a caretaker of my uncle's work. And I was so happy that the Bondante House evolved. I am pretty much the only relative left, but my desire would be to have the foundation take ownership of, I wasn't that familiar with the turnkey sculptures, but looking at the photos, that is probably not what my uncle desired to have happen. I know it's been a lot of years, but the deterioration, I mean, the city just, I don't know. It doesn't seem like they've been good caretakers of the work. And I know that foundation will restore and repair and have a good home for the sculptures. The Bondante house is like where all my uncle's work that is not somewhere else will be located. And that would be my desire, to have the foundation take control and repair, like I said, and present the work and showcase it. I have a feeling, although I don't know, looking at the photos, that those pillars and sculpture, you know, the what are they, the cubics, did originally sit on a base, but it looks like now they're just like on the ground and not in good shape at all. So anyway, that would be what I would like.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions?
I have a comment or a question, I guess, because some of the works, some of those turnkey pieces were moved. I know I've driven by one at Silver Lake Park, which I didn't realize that was that until Demon noted it, and it was painted. I was like, oh wait, I've seen that before. So would this process include trying to reunite all of the works that are known?
That would certainly be our preference. Okay. But also, Jim Glock, you would probably have maybe contextual information about some of this or institutional memory, since you were with the city maybe during that period.
Well, I help me, Damon, and maybe you mentioned this, and I'm kind of a space cadet in my older age. These were relocated from where and when?
Yeah, so it appears that this was, from what we can tell, the turnkey development was a public-private partnership. It was federal funding, and it was a private development group. And that was in 1970. So we suspect that this was a private commission as part of that. And then at some point that property was turned over to the City of Tucson Housing Authority or whatever the Department of Housing and Community became. And then that property was redeveloped. And we believe in 2020 as part of that redevelopment. That is not, I mean, that's just, that seems to be the only point that we could find where there was a redevelopment of the site. So it was somewhere on the south side. There was this affordable housing project, and as part of that, the site was redeveloped from 80 units to 25 units, and the sculptures, we think, at that point were relocated to various places. So somebody said, "Oh, these are nice, like sculptures. We should move them." But there doesn't appear to have been any sort of process, public or otherwise. Somehow they got relocated to other places. If that. Help.
So you don't know how long these pieces have been at that location?
Oh, I assume since 2020, so 25 years. And for the last decade,
2020, okay.
So that's our working. Yep. But for 10 years, that site has been vacant.
I understand.
Yeah.
So, again, for the benefit of others, I'm the former transportation director for the City of Tucson. During my tenure, South Park Avenue was improved under a Federal Transit Administration's Livable Communities Grant. That was an effort, I think, by the federal government to maybe live down some of its urban renewal mistakes from the 70s. Interesting enough, we did have a very significant public outreach effort associated with these improvements because of South Park's history of being one of the first and most active African-American communities in Tucson. Torne Kaiser was the artist along that particular project. I don't know if Torne is still around and available to perhaps consult on this, but I can't believe that she was not aware of these pieces along this corridor at that time. And from, you know, her perspective, she probably didn't see that they were public or private. She probably thought that they were part of the corridor. And if you look at some of the work that she did along there, I can't say that, you know, I think she did have a bit of a nod to the Clements work. But I'm curious whether there has been any effort to reach out to the South Park community and to the activists and to the historians and the folks there who were around in 2005 when the South Park improvements were done, and whether or not there was any community sentiment with respect to these pieces. I certainly like the idea of the foundation taking these over and maintaining them. I think, though, their location is kind of important. You know, with our current federal administration blaming everyone for being woke and whatnot, I think this may be important from a cultural perspective to recognize the unique characteristics of this neighborhood in this area, and that it was blessed with this type of artwork along there when, in many respects, the other types of work, you know, are going in areas that are not as culturally diverse and have such a unique history as South Park does. So I don't necessarily want it to see, I just kind of want to throw out there, it'd be nice to see if we could weave the history of this with respect to the particularly unique cultural history of this particular area, and how Mr. Clements may have actually been aware of that, and his pieces are in a way reflective of the context within which they are now sit. So again, I don't have any issue with respect to the them being turned over to the but I do think that their location is kind of important in the context of the history and the investment and the other artistic activities that have occurred along that particular corridor. And granted, you know, the maintenance budgets of the city for all aspects, not just public art, but for our streets and for everything else, has been woefully inadequate because of the nature of our economy and our tax base and what have you. So I guess that's my contextual perspective in this particular case, and it's all it does is complicate things even further as opposed to add any clarity, and I apologize for that. So
could I respond?
Oh, absolutely. No. Yeah. I'm just kind of I go back because that project, I'll tell you, we knocked on every door and were called names and ended up having a great relationship with that community. And I just I kind of have, and I could, you know, I know some people who worked on that who are still around. You may want to consult Jay Van Echo, was an engineer who, again,
I know Jay.
He spent a lot of time and effort because people did not trust the city at the time. And you know, again, Damon, just as you guys are not trusting the city even today, to overcome that. And I think that that's an important thing to consider with respect to this. I mean, I happen to have a particular fondness for these pieces in the fountain downtown and what have you. And I certainly share your concern with certainly disappearing pieces and things of that nature. At the same time, I have historical growing up in Berkeley, California perspective of wanting to be sensitive from a racial and cultural perspective. This particular effort. And again, I applaud what you're trying to do, and I just wanted to throw my two bits because I'll tell you that added some gray hair to this poor head of mine. So that particular project.
So, I mean, I would sort of respond with a few thoughts. One, until our request about the condition and the boarding up and the fact that this site has been vacant for 10 years, there doesn't appear to have been any communication from anyone about any of this. So if there are members of the community who are concerned, they have not vocalized that in a way that has triggered any sort of public response or public communication. So that's just, I just want to sort of frame it like that. It is on private, it is still on the City of Tucson private property. It's not in the public right of way. It was created again for a housing project as part of a public-private development. And so it was probably privately commissioned. You know, and as I noted, ultimately, if these don't receive adequate contextualization because they are completely out of their original context, they no longer are displayed in the way that they were intended. Only half of them survive. I don't think that they can be considered a work by Charles Clement unless they receive that type of recontextualization. And I think that's really where sort of the challenge with this particular issue is that you have works that, from our perspective, have been effectively forgotten and ignored and allowed to rot by the City of Tucson through the lack of investment, through the damage that has occurred. We notified the city that there had been an accident and a car had breached the fencing. And a month later, when we drove by, the fencing had not even been, I mean, this is just temporary refencing, and that had not been fixed, which was sitting on top of one of the sculptures. So there has been no urgency or care about these works, or any of the issues that we have tried to outline. And so I agree, it is important to get as many perspectives as possible, but I think that the artist's intent, is critical. Charles Clement is now considered a very significant mid-century artist, and the protection of his works, both public and private, have garnered a lot of attention. I would also point out that a work that was originally designed for the Jewish Community Center is now housed in the Holocaust Museum in Tucson and was restored recently. So there's been this renewed interest in the preservation and protection of his works. These are, I think, the most fragile, because they are literally deteriorating. A car could easily jump the curb and hit another one, or they could be stolen, or they could be set afire, all you have to go down and see them to see really what the condition of the site currently is. I think furthermore, we're a little concerned that the City of Tucson, is now anticipating selling this site. I mean, I was really concerned, and one of the reasons we brought this forward, I was concerned that the site was just gonna be cleared, that because the buildings have been boarded up for almost a decade, that they were going to demolish the buildings and that these would just be lost in the process, because I think we've, like the Noah's Ark sculpture, we saw that, you know, a lack of organizational continuity and attention or even recognition that it was an artwork. People just saw it as like a playground element. And so it was gotten rid of, and we just didn't want to see that happen again. So this is really sort of the trigger point. But I think if the works stay, they really would deserve a much more significant some sort of contextualization. And I don't know how that would occur, and I don't know what that would be, but they certainly can't stay on this site because it's going to go away. And so figuring out, so we're offering a solution that I think helps solve multiple things at once. I would also, just as a point of, you know, concern for us as an organization, we have also worked with the city on sculptures that were in good condition, like the Door is Always Open sculpture, which was by John Hike at the TCC. And as part of the TCC landscape restoration and the ECBO garden restoration, that sculpture was put into storage, and it has now been moved multiple times, and there is still no plan for relocation, and it's been gone for a long time. And as part of there was even a search, it was sort of a rediscovery of it, or like a identification of it as part of the Noah's Ark sculpture process, because it was like, oh, we still have this in storage. And it has not found a new location after almost 8 years. So, you know, I would say just there, we have a growing concern that as these, there is just this process issue that's occurring around some of these significant 20th century public works, both condition, maintenance, installation, reinstallation, uninstallation. If these were taken out and there's no city site, where do they go? How long do they sit in storage? What's the appropriate time? And then, like Noah's Ark, do they get tossed because somebody forgot what it meant or what the point was? Or do they even get more damaged in the process? So I just want to sort of frame all of that out there as well.
You've made that clear in your initial presentation. Again, my perspective is really from the perspective of of a community that is generally not one that makes it, is not an outspoken community. These people, you know, are busy worrying about where their next meal is going to come from, not about what their, you know, their community environment necessarily looks like. And so I think steps need to be taken to recognize that and to, again, as we did in 2005, knock on doors and pull it out of people to find out where some of these viewpoints might lie. And I would just appreciate that type of concern to be addressed in this particular effort. So again, you know, every point you raised is valid, and I'm just offering the perspective of one who worked in this community and how once you heard the story of the community and what they've gone through, that these types of pieces to be pulled from the community without really an understanding and or being able to relate, if they are moved, to what meaning they may have had to, again, it's kind of in your field too, a very important historic aspect of Tucson and with respect to the African-American community and how what it had to endure and how it thrived despite the challenges that they had to face. So anyway, that's
I also just
that's my woke perspective.
No, I 100% agree. I mean, I think reaching out to the community is critical. I live 8 blocks from the site. So, you know, the very people you're talking about are my neighbors and, you know, I know them well. So I think doing some outreach is important too. And in no way am I trying to diminish that. I'm just sort of articulating the complexity of this particular scenario.
Sure. No, I understand. I just didn't hear it acknowledged. So.
Thank you. Wesley?
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for your presentations. I just have a few clarifying questions just because we're talking so much about context. And I still am unclear of whether the original site was that 35th Street site and it just got redeveloped and the sculptures got redistributed or replaced in new locations on that site. What was the original address? So that's my first question. Second question is, I guess understanding better the context of the Bandante House and kind of all of the uses, is that going to be like is that a almost like a museum location where it'll be open to the public and people can throughout the year go visit it? What are all the different uses of the Bandante space?
So I will let the Public Arts Foundation talk about the original location. We don't have the address. It was definitely not where they are located now. They have been relocated and reorganized. It was a large housing project. This is a single building or two buildings on a small parcel that's on the corner. So they are no longer in their original context where this housing development was. The Arts Foundation can address any additional details about where they were originally came from. They would have the records. I mean, again, we're just assuming that they were moved in 2020. It could have happened a little later. It could have happened before. The Bandante House, you know, it is a residential neighborhood. It will not be a ongoing museum, but like the Preservation Foundation owns other historic properties, and we work very hard to find ways to allow the public onto those properties. In a host of different ways, whether it's through limited special events or specialized programming or exhibitions that are for limited, very sort of limited time. We want to be respectful also of that it is in this residential context and that, you know, there are limits to what zoning will allow. So we're, you know, and respecting the neighbors, but we are committed to finding ways, like in November where we hosted this retrospective exhibition of Charles Clement's work that was open throughout the month. We anticipate using the property in that way and to create opportunities for people to visit. Our properties are, you can schedule appointments. The University of Arizona students from the architecture department come through many of our buildings to see them. So it's not fully open to the public, but it is through limited engagement. And if anytime there's a request, we work very hard to honor and make those requests available. And we work to make programming available throughout the year, recognizing their limited architectural contexts.
And just a follow up. So the rest of the time, are they private residences? Do people?
No, we've made like with depends. So like the each property is different, but like the we own the Ball Paler House, which is a really significant early modernist design in Catalina Vista. We make it available through Airbnb for people to stay, so they can have this sort of special experience of Tucson. But then we make it available. Also, we give many nights away for free to multiple nonprofits throughout the community. And then we have these special events where people can access the property annually so that there is an opportunity to see and experience these special places. And we anticipate a variation or a similar model that generates revenue for the property to be able to maintain itself long term into the future, but also creates a balance with accessibility. And there are other Clement sculptures that are permanently on display there now. And I believe that you had the opportunity to visit that exhibition.
Yeah, and I can answer kind of the context of the sculptures, Leslie. We probably have just as much information available to us as Damien or really the public. From what I've found, it looks like the sculptures have been there since 2008, but because of, you know, we don't have the full documentation of how Clement was like involved in the first place or how his involvement with like the specific pieces that he proposed for each building. It's all that's still very unclear, and we're kind of just piecing together information to figure out how the works came to be in the first place. So a lot of empty spaces in the information, for sure.
But do we know where that south, didn't we know the name of the initial housing project? And do we have a record of where, what part of town that was in?
It was in this part of the community.
There's been a few records that I've like looked through that does mention which properties are part of like this asset specifically for the public housing, but I haven't been able to pin down like an exact location. And so what Damien had said previously, when some of these areas were renovated and consolidated, some of these sculptures were moved, but from where exactly, I haven't been able to surface any of that information.
But it's the consensus that they've always been installed in South Tucson.
Right.
To clarify, not South Tucson, South Park.
South Park neighborhood, which is not considered to be in the city of South Tucson. It's correct. Just outside the city limits. Okay.
Any other questions or comments?
Yeah, I have a question. So what is the next step? Oh, was that on the flow chart? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sorry, I was bringing up that flow chart. So I think that's something that we just have to discuss as the committee. If, you know, this is all just informational today, there's no action or anything to vote upon for the next meeting. If we want to, or even now, if there's something that you would like to request additional information on, or for the next meeting, come with suggestions, the PACD members, of course, because Damien had proposed something already. That's something that we can discuss now. But it is up to the committee. Arts Foundation is here to just facilitate the process really just help in any way that we can to resolve the situation.
Do
Do you know what the timeline is in terms of the Tucson sale of the property and the city of Tucson's anticipated sale of the property? And you said that they were flexible, but is it like within a year that property is going to be sold?
They're looking to do it sooner. What they had said was by the end of the year to list it. And as real estate goes, it's not like you list something and it's off the market immediately. So
Is it this year?
that
2025?
this year, yeah. So it is something that I will follow up with them, let them know that this meeting happened if we want to request that the listing is delayed, or I will definitely reach out to them and let them know that this is pending. They did it all. They did explicitly say that if there's some movement towards a sale, that the objects can be explicitly stated that they will not be part of the sale. Obviously, we would want to like resolve all of this before. So I think maybe suggesting to if we can push for the listing to be delayed.
And so I just have a couple. One is sort of like a thought experiment, and then one is more of a technical question. So if we had not raised this concern a few months ago about these sculptures, and the city real estate had gone to list this, would there have been a trigger point where they would have reached out to the Public Arts Commission, or the property would have just been sold with the sculptures on it, and then that would have been that? Like, what is the process? Like, if the city real estate is putting a property up for sale, because again, I think that really sort of articulates part of the issue, our broader concern. Like, did you like how like does what is the process for that to take into consideration public works? Because I guess I'm concerned that this is just part of a continuum, of lack of care by departments related to some of this.
Yeah, that's totally understandable. And
I
I
can
think the
speak.
frustrations that were raised for the Noah's Ark, all of that's like compounding into like not trusting the city. And I totally understand that. I will say that I've been working with city departments personally, like to, do a better job of making sure that I do condition checks on these locations. And I haven't been with the foundation for more than a year, so part of my role is to go to these physical locations and do checks. So when there is an object that does seem to be in poor condition, that's where it is triggered that we will reach out to the city. But also, we are a nonprofit. We are a small team that we do, honestly, like we do depend on the public and other organizations that do care about art to collaborate with us. And we are definitely not like trying to gatekeep any public art because it is public art, right? So I think that's also something that needs to be something that is important is just that the collaborative effort of making sure that these works are cared for. But yes, you do raise like an important point that yes, had you not reached out, it's unsure of like if they would have reached out to us, but we have been building relationships with the city to strengthen that our presence is here and that we care for these works. So
And so I guess my second question would be, or I guess more of it's a comment. So it seems like there should be, I mean, I would request that the committee, so I mean, it seems like you're going to have to do something no matter what, whether our request came or not. There is a, like now urgency around a resolution in some factor. So even if it's excluded from the sale, I mean, it's going to have to be removed. I mean, nobody's going to say, oh yeah, you can keep your, heavy concrete sculptures that might fall over on somebody or be hit by a car. Like there's just a li there's liability issues that really are going to be have to get resolved, and the sculptures would have to be relocated from there, regardless of the whether our request is considered or not. So I guess, and it seems like that is, time is of the essence. If they're planning to list the property within the next 2 weeks, what is the process for sort of a rapid response that doesn't also require spending $8,000 twice to relocate them to storage and then relocate them again. Like, what is the, what, I mean, have you guys had these types of situations where there's had to be like an emergency removal? I won't call it emergency removal because of the time frame that's going on now.
I can chime in. Yes, because if that property is no longer a city owned property, city assets can't be on it. So it would be some sort of agreement and working out on how to essentially relocate them, even at temporary. So we haven't had to do that with many things, and most of the things that we've had experience of the current Arts Foundation team are works that had already been removed and are currently sitting in storage. As you mentioned, one of the works that was at Reed Park is now in storage and looking for a home. So the safety of the objects for the present and for, I don't know, a year or so of when this sale is transpiring, removing the artwork is going to happen. But I think what this committee should think about is the urgency of its new home, because like you said, $8,000 and $16,000 are too big numbers, considering the size of them, considering that even moving them to storage is going to require cranes and permits. I think trying to find a resolution sooner than later would be ideal.
And just as an extra sort of like added bonus, I mean, and based on my site visit, there looks like there are works that are not by Clement on that building that I hope are being considered for removal as part of that. So there are murals, looks like there are tile murals and other elements that are in frames and look like they could be relocated from that site that are not integral to the building. So I would just encourage you as part of this to consider those as well. I don't know who the artists are. We didn't look into them, but there does appear to be other artistic works that are inside. They might be related, Jim, to you, the work that happened in 2000.
Before 2005. The Arizona Historical Society has a report that my department generated back then that might be of some of use. Has Ward 5 been approached with respect to this?
I notified them. I haven't heard back from them, but they do, okay. Their office is aware.
Any other comments or questions on this item? And you will have an opportunity to suggest future agenda items later on in the meeting.
I guess I just worry that while this all moves committee after committee after committee and the artworks are still sitting out there deteriorating, because I don't think anything happens fast in this city. there are still many potholes on a major street by my house that God knows when those will get fixed. But that's my concern, that they need to be, you know, I don't know the answer, but I think they need to, something needs to happen in order for them not to be, you know, just dissolved into the earth. That so. I think if they were restored, I don't have a problem with them moving to a spot where more of the public can see them. Again, I don't know if that's going to happen. That's just my thoughts.
Thank you. Any other comments or questions before we move on to item 5, requests for additions for future agendas? Okay, Hearing none, thank you all for your comments and questions and presentation. Damien, sorry.
Yeah, no, I just don't hear a path forward in any way. Like I've just, you know, like there's been a lot of discussion, but you know, that the fact that there's not, you know, I mean, I've heard from Mr. Glock, I've heard a series of requests. Like one, is there the possibility of doing some sort of public outreach in the South Park neighborhood to really hear explicitly from neighbors their feelings about these works? Two, there's a report at the Historical Society. Could that be identified and may provide a little more context on some of the initial aspects of this? Three, there's a pending real estate transaction. So, you know, is there a path forward in the next, you know, to have a meeting and within a month with some choices, with like a sequence of choices? I don't know what those choices are. That's, you know, for you guys to sort of outline. But it seems like the sort of major choices are what would storage look like? What's the cost of storage? How long is the commitment to be in storage? When does that commitment, if nothing is reinstalled in a period of time, does that then trigger a different inflection point? Because, you know, it's always great to say, like, let's put something into storage, and like the door is always open piece from the TCC. Almost a decade later, it's not reinstalled. So what are the sort of, you know, outlining a very, very clear path and saying like, here are three different options that we can implement or recommend. And maybe they're in, you know, order A, B, and C. I mean, that would sort of be my hope in this process, because I guess my concern is when, you know, I don't hear any new agenda items, it's just like, well, we're going to have another meeting and we're going to have more discussion as opposed to action. And it seems like we need action sooner rather than later. But again, I'm not on the committee, so I'm.
I appreciate that. This is listed as just a study item. And so at our, the next item is where the committee members can suggest some of the things that you have noted for our next meeting. And we can, well, depending on the request, we can list it as a study or an action to provide a recommendation to the greater PACTC.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Any other thoughts on this item?
So we couldn't take action today, even if we wanted.
No, not on this item.
Okay. So then I'll wait till the next agenda item to make my recommendations. But in case the Clements representatives don't want to stick around, my request is going to be to agendize this for action at a subsequent meeting with the information that we have at hand. And, you know, our action may have some caveats and some conditions associated with it, but during that item at a subsequent meeting, we'll hopefully we can have that happen sooner than later. Again, it might have to wait till next year given the holidays to give you some understanding of where we're going with respect to that, some clarity that you deserve with respect to that. So really today was very helpful in getting some context and some background on it, on everything. And I think I personally hear the urgency associated with this, and we'll work with staff to take that on. Having had the real estate division under me during my tenure, things typically had been, sales had been circulated to city departments, whether or not. And I do recall, for example, the Martin Luther King building downtown, a very similar type of mosaic that we see behind these structures was addressed and was dealt with by leaving it where it was, interestingly enough. And the new General Services Department that's housing the real estate division is aware of the need for that to occur. And again, we're getting Ward 5's attention, I think, would be helpful, because ultimately any sale has to go before the mayor and council for their approval.
And just one last thing before we move to item 5 is that, knowing the urgency of it and the potential of the artworks possibly being destroyed or removed if a sale were to happen, we'll be doing that action that's outside of this committee anyway, of ensuring that the work is in removed or destroyed during the sale process. Oh, and we are working with Board 5, but as you know, there's a new councilwoman. So we're letting them get settled in, and then we're going to have a nice meet and greet.
Okay. So we will move on now to item 5, request additions for future agenda items. Are there any members who would like to request items for our next meeting? Jim?
Yes. I was giving everyone else a chance. So I'd like to bring this back to the deaccession committee as soon as it can get scheduled for us to potentially provide some guidance and some action associated with it, with whatever between now and then additional information we can achieve, such information in particular being a clear and definitive perspective from Ward 5 where they stand, to the extent that any contacts can be made in the South Park neighborhood and those who are still around. I mean, it's been 20 years since I've been involved down there, and some of the individuals we were dealing with may not very well be with us anymore. And maybe if Torrene is still in Tucson, reaching out to her might be helpful as well. So I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Thank you. Any other requests? All right. Well, if you think of anything in the meantime, feel free to reach out to me at pacd@artsfoundtucson.org for any other additional requests.
And I want to thank again those involved with the Clements Legacy for their attention to this and bringing it forward for our consideration and hopeful alacrity in acting. So,
thank you.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you. We'll move on to item 6, call to the audience. Members of the public must sign up to speak at the call to the audience script link in the agenda, which is posted on the City of Tucson's Boards, Committees, and Commissions website. This is the time when any member of the public may address the Public Art and Community Design Committee members. Due to the time constraints, the total time allocated for this is 15 minutes. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes each. At the conclusion to the call to the audience, members of the public may respond to a personal criticism made by those who have addressed the public body, may ask staff to review a matter, or may ask that a matter be put on a future agenda. Please note that personal criticisms do not include criticisms of a policy, project, proposal, etc. Members of the public body shall not discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. And there are no community members who are signed to speak today. With that, we're moving on to item 7, adjournment. Thank you all for your participation in this meeting. And we are adjourning at 11:28 a.m. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.